Okay, so thank you very much. It's a pleasure always to give talks to mathematicians, because I find that mathematicians always like to get a little bit of explanation of how they might end up dying. So, is there a pointer that I could have? Ah, okay. Two. Okay, that's good. Okay, so this is an example of an electrocardiographic record. And this is, each one of these lines is 20 seconds in length. These narrow blips over here are records of the what's called the QRS complex, that's associated with the normal heartbeat. And these other broader complexes are abnormal heartbeats. They're called premature ventricular contractions. Over the course of this record, which is a few minutes in length, you can see that these premature ventricular contractions increase in frequency. There are short bouts of repeated repetitions that you have to realize that this is an electrocardiogram, which is measurement of the surface voltage associated with the cardiac activity from the surface of the body. So in some sense, this is a projection of some rather complicated spatio-temporal dynamics that's happening. Down here, you see that the same complex that you had over here is repeated, but then something else happens. And what happens in that case is a cardiac arrhythmia, which is called tachycardia. Tachycardia means that it's going too fast. It's called a ventricular tachycardia because it's coming from the ventricles, a port chamber of the heart. And in this particular case, this was from a patient who was in the intensive care unit. In this particular case, they brought the cart over and they gave the patient shocks like you see on television, and the patient survived after that. This was a very sick patient. If the patient had been outside of the hospital at this point, the patient would have died. So in terms of giving a talk, like, what is it that I'd like you to try to remember or think about after the talk? And what I'd like you to try to remember and think about after the talk is this record. Because this record essentially kind of epitomizes the topic of the conference of spatiotemporal bifurcations. I forgot at the beginning to say what a pleasure it is to be here. Congratulations. When Bill left Montreal, we got to Montreal at around the same time, and then when he left Montreal to go to Guelph, it was a great loss for McGill at the time. And greener fields in Guelph, I guess. So this is an example of a spatiotemporal bifurcation. I'm not tuning the parameter. Nobody's tuning the parameter. The body, in some sense, has had some sets of factors which have suddenly tuned the parameter or changed the parameter or done something so that this little complex over here, which was completely benign, in this case, turned into a potentially fatal arrhythmia. So in the real world, cardiac arrhythmias may suddenly start, and they may suddenly stop. So some of these are arrhythmias which spontaneously stop. And what a topic of inquiry that's of great interest to our group and to me personally is to try to understand a little bit about what mechanisms can lead cardiac arrhythmias to spontaneously start and stop. So this is a slide that comes from someone named George Mines, who is actually a British physiologist who migrated to Toronto and Montreal in about 1913 or 14, and who was found dead in mysterious circumstances in McGill the year after this paper came out in 1914, I believe. So this is trying to make a proposal for the mechanism that may underlie the rhythm that I just showed you. what actually is the mechanism of the rhythm that I just showed you in the preceding slide is something I do not know the answer to. We don't know what was happening in that person's heart. But what Mines was proposing is that you may have somehow or other in the heart a ring of tissue, and under some circumstances a wave may get started on the ring, and sometimes it might get started on the ring and just go around the ring and die out, but in some cases it might start on the ring, it may go around the ring, it may get blocked in one direction and may lead to a circulating excitation traveling around the ring. That would be what we're calling reentrant excitation, and that could potentially, that would not be normal. Normally there's a specific pacemaker region of the heart which is the pacemaker. Now, this particular conceptual model of cardiac arrhythmias is still very much one of the conceptual models that cardiologists have of cardiac arrhythmias. This is from a clinical article from someone, Mark Josephson and colleagues. Mark Josephson is a cardiac electrophysiologist who is a clinician who makes his living by taking catheters and sticking the catheters in the person's heart who have serious arrhythmias and burning and killing a portion of those people's hearts. By killing part of the tissue in the person's heart, he tries to cure the arrhythmia. So it seems somewhat anti-intuitive to think that by killing some part of the heart, by destroying some part of the heart, you might cure the arrhythmia. But you have to realize that although he's a cardiologist, and though he doesn't say that he knows anything about mathematics, he thinks like a topologist. If there's a pathway in the heart supporting the tachycardia that he can destroy, then he would be able to cure the tachycardia. And he thinks of the pathway as forming a one-dimensional ring. Therefore, if he can cut the ring, if he can burn the ring, he can cure the tachycardia. So this is actually how he makes a living. It works, and he has a much nicer car than I do. So this conceptual model of what's happening in some patients' hearts, this is in a particular type of person who has had a heart attack, has had blockage of coronary arteries leading to death of tissue. Now, we've been interested in understanding and studying experimental models for cardiac arrhythmias. In order to do this, there's been an apparatus that's built, and it's an apparatus involving both hardware and a lot of software development. And the real main person who has done that work is Gil Bubb, who's been a student of myself and Alvin Schreier. And there have been a number of other people in the laboratory, Yoshihiko Nagai, Katsumi Tateno, and also there's some work by Hortensia Gonzalez that I'll refer to in a second. So what's done is there's a dish of cardiac cells, and these are cardiac cells that are built from chicken hearts. So the cells are dissociated. The chicken hearts are from an embryonic stage before the chickens are born out of their egg or peck their way out of the egg. The hearts are, the tissue can be dissected and the cells dispersed, and then the cells can reaggregate and form ties between them. And they can be grown in a variety of different geometries. The activity can be imaged by adding dyes, either calcium or voltage-sensitive dyes, which fluoresce different colors depending on the activity that's taking place. And so this is the apparatus that Gil built in order to try to study that. Now, Hortensia Gonzalez, who is a faculty member in Mexico who spent a year sabbatical, was interested in building rings of cells. So this is now an image from a ring cells that are plated in the shape of an annulus or a ring of tissue. And if this works, you can see that in some circumstances, you get a pacemaker forming. So these are just looped. These are short excerpts of longer records. So sometimes it's just a pacemaker that acts and sends a wave going off around the ring. And in other circumstances, you can have the wave circulating around the ring, very much the way Mines anticipated 90 years ago in his paper. And then In other circumstances, you can get extremely complicated dynamics. So in this case, there's a pacemaker. Oh, let's try to see when it starts again. There's a pacemaker up there. Whoops. Where's the beginning? Pacemaker there. Sends off waves. Waves. Now, one of the waves is going to block and keeping on going around. So one side blocked there, and then it kept on going around the ring, and there's a kind of fighting back and forth between the waves coming, the waves blocking in some portions of the ring, circulating around what's happening in the ring. Okay? So in order to think about how these sorts of rhythms can take place and how to understand what's happening, we base the analysis on what we consider the sort of generic physiological properties of real heart cells. One is that they're excitable. This means that if they're stimulated, they can propagate this wave of activity leading to a contraction and action potential. Heart cells, or at least some of the heart cells, have their own intrinsic oscillatory behavior. There are pacemaker cells of the heart. That's why your heart beats. There's another property which we call fatigue, which is associated with the following, that if a cell is rapidly excited, it becomes less excitable following the rapid activation. So there's something so that the rapid stimulation of it gets it less excitable. And then, of course, in all real systems, real biological systems, the cells are not homogeneous, but there are heterogeneities of a number of different sorts in the medium. In order to try to do a mathematical model of the ring, we adapted equations which are known as the Fitzsimonides-Nagumo equations. For those who are not familiar with this, this is a generic model for a nerve cell or a cardiac cell which can propagate a wave, but two waves coming towards each other will annihilate if they're coming towards each other. So in this particular mathematical model, there's a pacemaker that's over there sending off waves. There's another pacemaker over here, and the pacemakers, as they're getting excited more rapidly than they would like to be, than their intrinsic frequency, will tend to build up fatigue so that there can be a blockage and an initiation of the circulation. So here's the pacemaker, and this is cyclic boundary condition, so that waves that start over there will go and will come back in on the other side. So now we'll see if this works. Okay, so there's the wave starting there, going crashing on the opposite side. Now a wave is going to go there, and the next one is going to continue around because the wave in the other direction has been blocked, and so the wave can now start circulating around the ring of cells, and then this wave also will get blocked eventually, and the pacemaker will take over again. So you can have a cycling back and forth between a pacemaker and a reentrant type wave. So this is a conceptual model of what might underlie the initiation and starting and stopping of these reentrant waves of activity. Now, there are many properties of excitation circulating on rings. One is that as the ring becomes smaller, an instability develops so that the cycle time fluctuates quasi-periodically. This was phenomena which was initially observed experimentally, and then subsequently ourselves and other people have tried to develop a mathematical understanding. I'm not going to talk much about that. I'm not going to talk at all about that any further. Another property which is also of interest to us is that a single stimulus can either reset or annihilate the excitation. So as the wave is going around the ring, if a single stimulus is delivered to the ring, then sometimes it might reset the timing of the oscillation, and in other circumstances, it may annihilate the oscillation. And I'm going to say a little bit about that. And then finally, the resetting, in some cases, might be able to be used to predict what happens when you give multiple periodic stimulation, and I'm not going to talk about that at all. I just wanted to mention, since this is a math meeting, I just wanted to try to talk about the annihilation. So if we have a wave circulating around the ring, one of the techniques, actually there are devices you can buy which are called anti-tachycardia paces, which will give either a single or multiple stimuli. This is something that the cardiologist puts in your heart, and if it detects that there's an excitation going around, it might give some small, relatively small, little shocks at a rate a little bit higher than the frequency, and this can in many cases terminate that abnormal rhythm. From a mathematical point of view, with Thomas Gedeon, we were interested in trying to prove that a single pulse delivered to an excitation circulating in a one-dimensional ring that there should be critical timing which will lead to annihilation of the circulating pulse. We do not have a proof of this. We have a strategy for a proof. The strategy for the proof has three parts. The first part is to say, first, a ring of excitable media supports a circulating pulse. So whether or not that's something which is actually proven for a one-dimensional ring of finite size for Fitzhugh-Nagumo equation is something that I'm not clear about. Thomas Gedeon, I'm sure many people here know him as a real mathematician, so there's not a proof of that that's satisfactory for him at the moment. There's a continuity theorem, which is if a perturbation delivered at any phase of a limit cycle oscillation leaves the state point in the basin of attraction of the limit cycle, then resetting curves are continuous. Resetting curves are curves which essentially are a map of the circle, S1 into itself, which gives the phase of an oscillation as a function of a phase at which you give the stimulus. So if you are always in the basin of attraction, if any stimulus always leaves you in the basin of attraction, then it follows that that resetting curve should be continuous. And the initial proofs of this, or the initial lemmas that follows from immediately, were done by John Guggenheimer way back in 1973 or 5. But this is now in a context of a partial differential equation rather than in an ordinary differential equation. So this is a result which we think is a definite result. And then the final result which would be needed to try to prove this theorem, or so-called theorem, is that resetting curves for stably circulating pulses on a one-dimensional ring are discontinuous. So we believe it in numerical studies and so forth, that if you deliver resetting stimuli to waves circulating on these rings, then you do see discontinuities. But in fact, we can't prove that that has to happen for excitable media in general. Okay, so that's dynamics on a ring. I want to move up to dynamics in two dimensions, and I will just try to show you a number of pictures very quickly. So in two dimensions, you can get pacemakers and you can get rotating spiral waves using either calcium-sensitive dyes or using voltage-sensitive dyes. One of the things that Gil Bubb has observed is that as you grow cells in tissue culture, as the time in tissue culture changes, you get different sorts of dynamics. Initially, you can get very low activity and occasional bursts of activity. Longer time in tissue culture, you get bursts of activity. And then finally, you get constant and steady activity. So one of the things which we're interested in is these bursts of activity, because this is in some sense reminiscent of the sorts of bursts that we see clinically and so forth. This is an example of an individual burst of activity. This is the formation. So there's a spontaneous formation of an oscillating wave, which spontaneously stops. This is what the activity would look like just measured from one point in space. And so this stops spontaneously, and then it's going to reinitiate spontaneously. So you get spontaneous activity starting and stopping. What Gil has been doing is he's trying to grow the cells under different conditions, so going from high density where there's good connectivity to low density, and using a pharmacological agent which is going to block the connectivity between these cells. So he's trying to sketch out the different behaviors that happen as you change these two parameters. So we can turn this on. We can turn on each one of these things. This is my most exciting PowerPoint that I've ever done in my life. So you can see when you have no pharmacological agent, high density, whoops, whoa, this was almost more exciting. you get rapid spread of the excitation from a single point. As you decrease the conductivity, either using the drug or by having a lower density, you get much less organized, slower wave propagation, beginning to form spiral waves, and those spiral waves can have bursts of activity. There are different sorts of ways in which these phenomena can be systematically investigated. This is a cellular automata model that was done once again by Gil Bubb. Initially, there's the top row of cells is excited, and that wave is going to propagate down through this medium. This is a coupling parameter, so when it's high, things are very well coupled, and when it's low, things are poorly coupled. So when it's high, the wave propagates through, and after 100 time steps is close to the bottom. When that coupling is weaker, then the wave doesn't move as rapidly. When the coupling is too low, then it doesn't really move at all. It gets stuck. And when the coupling is kind of in an intermediate range, the wave goes through and leaves behind spiral waves which form spontaneously in its wake. By making a very, very simple theoretical model, Gil can kind of come up with a mean field approach to figure out whether a cell a given distance delta away from the wavefront is going to be activated on the next time step, and it depends on whether the active area divided by the entire area in that particular field is greater than a certain threshold for wave propagation. So based on that, he's able to come up. You have a general picture in which there's a region in which there's block behavior, in which there's plane wave propagation, and in between those regions there are formation of spiral waves as the wave tries to propagate through the medium. This can be extended, these notions can be extended by trying to now add on some spontaneous activity, as well as by including also some fatigue activity so that the cells become less excitable as the activity continues. So just when there's a big region of interaction on the top, this is now running and these are different parts, big region of interaction, you get individual pacemakers forming waves going out. Poorer interaction, you get initiation of spiral waves. Those spiral waves go on for a long time and then will eventually die out on their own. These are three different parts in the same record. So you do find bursting behavior, and then you find this region in which this is as you change the fatigue parameter and as you change the radius of interaction, you see different types of behavior, one in which there's block, others in which the waves propagate but break, then you can form regions in which there's spirals and bursting spirals, and then you get regions in which there are targets and so forth. So we believe this is work which we're just trying to write up at the moment. We believe that there's this universal type of organization which is true in excitable media in which there are heterogeneities, in which there's spontaneous activity, and which there's fatigue. Now, I'll just try to mention, and I'll just take 2 more minutes to try to mention one direction for practical applications. One of the things which is interesting in medicine is that there are possibilities for coming up with practical applications. There are rhythms which, this is now just from a website about a particular rhythm called atrial fibrillation. The idea in atrial fibrillation, what people believe, are that these sorts of spiral waves that we've been talking about are now confined to the atria, the upper regions of the heart, and they lead to irregular propagation to the ventricles. In order to get data on atrial fibrillation, we can go to a website from Ari Goldberger where there's data concerning atrial fibrillation, and we've developed an algorithm to be able to detect automatically whether or not a particular record displays atrial fibrillation by trying to analyze the histograms of the beat of the timing between the particular heartbeats. It seems like it should be easy to identify when there's atrial fibrillation, but in fact, at the moment, there are no good algorithms which people have been able to implement to do this automatically. So I would just like to conclude. Experimental systems and mathematical models of reentry show paroxysmal rhythms that start and stop, similar to paroxysmal reentrant rhythms. These have not been a focus, so the sorts of rhythms that start and stop spontaneously in space to date have not been the focus of a lot of mathematical research, I guess in contrast to many of the classic talks that we've been hearing earlier. Also, applications that use nonlinear mathematics for better diagnosis and control of cardiac arrhythmias are under development. And finally, just acknowledgments. Alvin Schreier, my longtime collaborator, Ari Goldberger, Gil Bubb did the big bulk of the work on the optical imaging. Hortensia Gonzalez built the rings. And Yoshiko Nagai and Katsumi Tateno also working on this work. Supported by NSERC, CIHR, MITAX, NIH, Canadian Heart and Stroke Foundation. And I also just wanted to finish by saying that in May of 2004, we're having a summer school on systems biology dynamics from genes to organisms. I left some posters outside. If people would take one and put them up on their local bulletin boards, and if students are interested in coming, I'd be happy to talk to them. So thanks very much.